Everyone's going to get stresses at life, but the more resilient you are, the more you have that ability to adapt to that stress so it doesn't wear you down. Prevention is better than the cure. Trying to stop that happening in the first place. So can you change your perspective? We used to be hunter-gatherers. So our stress response used to be from having a dinosaur trying to chase you. But now what's happening is the stresses are different to that. So it may not be a dangerous animal, but it could be the constant flow of emails where people can't switch off. So I think the way society has evolved is very different to maybe how humans should live. But I think to have a fulfilling life, you need a meaningful purpose. And that's where it's important for the models. You know, if they've got a purpose why they're doing it, they've got a reason, they've got a passion, that will give them that drive and determination. That will give them hopefully that fulfillment in life.
Welcome back to the Model Agents podcast. I'm your host, Gemma Howarth, and today's guest is someone who quite literally climbs mountains for a living. Dr. Raj Joshi is an elite expedition leader, medical doctor, and founder of the Adventure Boutique. He's taken celebrities like David Beckham through the Amazon and guided teams to the top of Everest. Raj isn't just about physical challenges. He's all about transformation, pushing limits, and unlocking human potential. You're in for an epic ride. Let's get into it. All right. So tell us about you. Where did it all begin?
So Gemma, it began ever since I was a baby, really. Since I was in nappies. I had an interesting upbringing because my parents were very adventurous. So what we used to do were travel around the UK as well. We were lucky as well to go abroad. And around the UK, we went to some fabulous places like North Wales, Scotland, exploring the mountains, the hills, the forests. So I had a very outdoorsy upbringing. We'd be camping a lot. And I developed a natural affinity for the outdoors from a very early age. And as I grew older, I felt that I had probably a stronger connection with nature and the outdoors than I do with a city environment. And over time, I then got into climbing and met a great group of friends, a group of climbers who were older than myself, more experienced. And we started going abroad, climbing big mountains. And from that, I developed, you could say, a dual career because I'm a medical doctor. And soon after I qualified as a doctor, I also started working professionally in the outdoor industry, guiding and leading expeditions around the world. So I'm an expedition leader and take people on adventure challenges to different countries, in fact, to every continent around the world in various more unusual and some would say more extreme environments like deserts, jungle, polar or mountain regions. So that's a bit about my background.
Amazing. So you've been up Mount Everest. How was that experience?
Incredible expedition. I was fortunate to go on an expedition in 2007. And we were an 8-person team. Spent about 2 months trying to climb the mountain. And physically, psychologically, very demanding, very challenging. But it was a great experience. We were very lucky with I had a fantastic team around me, and weather-wise as well, it had its moments. But overall, we had a good weather on summit night, and that was a magical experience because I grew up a bit with a history of Mount Everest. Mm. As you're probably aware, it was summited by a British expedition in 1953, so it has a strong connection with the UK. Although the actual summiteers were Tenzing Norgay Sherpa and Edmund Hillary. So it was actually a Sherpa from Nepal and a New Zealander who summited as part of the British expedition. And then when we did the expedition, there were some interesting challenges because actually trying to climb the mountain can be quite dangerous. So you get a lot of deaths, unfortunately, every year.
Yeah.
It can be in double figures. And while we were there, there were unfortunately people who died. And we also got involved with two rescues,
wow.
Which hopefully, you know, we on the way down after summiting, we had to rescue two people. Wow. And in one of those rescues, we almost, I'd say we almost got killed ourselves, actually.
Really?
But thankfully, a few minutes either side, we could have been a goner. There's a thing on Everest called the Khumbu Icefall, which is a flowing river of ice. It's about a kilometre long flowing river of ice, where to actually climb the mountain to set foot above base camp, you've got to go through this notorious and treacherous icefall. And it constantly shifts and changes because it is moving all the time. And so no matter how skillful, experienced you are, you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and your number could be up because you could get squashed by a big ice rack the size of a three-story house.
Wow.
Or you could be walking on a very weak snow bridge, not understanding that the snow underneath your feet, below that is just a huge chasm.
My God.
The snow bridge could break and you could fall in. And then you also got avalanche risk as well from the west shoulder of Everest. So when we had to do one of the rescues, we had to take the injured party who had bad frostbite through the Khumbu Icefall down to base camp to then try to get a helicopter to evacuate them back to Kathmandu. And you don't want to be messing around in this Khumbu Icefall because as deadly as it is, you want to reduce your transit time. So with a casualty we had, that actually increased our transit time and probably doubled it, which increased our risk. And that's where we nearly got caught out by what's called an icefall collapse, where around us everything was collapsing. And a few minutes after that dangerous area we passed through, the whole thing went.
Oh my God.
We were there at that time when it went, we would have been a goner. But thankfully, we survived that.
And was that the infamous Red Nose Day?
No.
Another one.
So the Red Nose Day was, I was privileged to be asked to lead a group of celebrities for Comic Relief on Kilimanjaro, so the highest mountain in the African continent. So it was a group of 9 celebrities, and it had the aim of raising money to fight malaria in East Africa. And just through that one expedition alone, they raised, I think it was almost £3.5 million to help fight malaria in East Africa.
Can you say who the celebs were?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because it was on a BBC documentary.
Yeah.
And the people involved were Cheryl Cole, her bandmate as well, Kimberly Walsh, and Gary Barlow, Chris Moyles, Radio 1 DJ at the time. There was Ronan Keating, Alicia Dixon, Fern Cotton, Denise Van Outen, and Ben Shepherd.
Good memory.
And I'm thinking if I've missed anyone out, so apologies to them if I have done, but I'm hoping that was about 9.
Was this the infamous trip where Cheryl actually caught malaria? She came back, I think. No,
it wasn't that trip.
Oh,
no,
okay.
She didn't catch it on our expedition. She went again to East Africa another time of her own accord, or I don't know which organisation, and then she caught it that time, but not on our expedition.
So how was that for you, managing so many egos and climbing a mountain?
To be fair, I thought they were really nice people, but it was challenging. Kilimanjaro, for me, is a fairly straightforward mountain for me to actually do, but leading it and leading this expedition, it's always challenging leading others because they're under your charge and care for 24/7, so all the time, day or night, and it has got its risks. And on that expedition, as well as the 9 celebrities, I had various people from the film crew to look after. So I had a group of 33. And on top of that, with all the filming equipment and the care for the group of 33, I had a huge local team, which I had to coordinate as well. So we had over 120 porters, a lot of guides. So it was a big, big project.
Yeah.
And to me, the challenge, though, is leading this expedition is trying to gel everyone together, as well as the risks of climbing the mountain and making sure people are safe, but gelling all the different departments involved because they each have their own agenda. So the celebrities, the talent themselves will have their own agenda. The film crew would have their own agenda. The sound team would have their own agenda. The producers will have their own agenda. The directors, the numerous bodyguards we had on the mountain. So it was trying to make sure that as a team we gel together, because actually that was really important, is developing that teamwork so they actually succeeded on the mountain. And I'm pleased to say, as well as the 9 celebrities, all of them summiting, all the film crew did as well. So all 33 of the expedition team members made it to the summit of Kilimanjaro and back down safely, which is most important.
Going back to working as a team, why would you say it was so important to make sure everyone was working together?
Because it's really important to develop the support structures amongst you. And I see that in life generally, because same way as when I work as a doctor and I see people, and to me, having a really good support structure around you actually fosters resilience. I say that's one of the key factors in making an individual more resilient. So on the mountain, as you gel the team together, because some of the celebrities have never, they didn't know each other. Some knew others.
Yeah.
But others they didn't know so well. So it's important to get that support structure amongst the group so they can lean on each other, support each other. And I say that's the same in life, really, you know, whether it's the patients I come across, patients as well with sometimes who might have some mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. If you develop that support structure around them and they increase their resilience by that, that is invaluable.
Mm. So bringing that advice back into body and what we do is really interesting, because obviously, as you know, we have our model management team that are mental health trained, and you know, so many people now have struggle with mental health problems. So just for us, giving our support to them, as you're saying, is just going to help.
Definitely. I think the support among from yourselves, from their colleagues they work with, is really important. I remember one thing I had to do on the mountain on Kilimanjaro on the Comet Relief Expedition is try to give a lot of people self-belief and confidence. Mm. And that was also key. But on top of that as well is also, I think with the resilience piece, is also giving them that stiff upper lip, if you can, to a degree, because people will go through challenges and you can't let that defeat them. So I think giving that confidence and self-belief that they can do things, can achieve things, helps with that support structure and being there for them. And then on top of that, also trying to put into perspective about the challenges they're facing, that they've got to put it in relative to everything else, and giving them that, what I call that stiff upper lip, sometimes can be important so they can get on with things. So even if they're going through a bad day or hard day, they've got the resilience to get through it, knowing actually, let's just get on with things.
Mm.
Let's just do it, get it over done with, rather than moaning or complaining so much.
Mm.
But on top of that then is fostering that support around you. If anything did go wrong, that you're there to get their back, which is really important, I find, to an extreme level on the expeditions, because it's a risky environment. If anything went wrong, my clients need to know that I've got their back. I'm there to support them to potentially save their life if anything happens, as well as a team around me. So I think that's really important. And likewise, when I climb with friends, I'm climbing with my friends, we know that we've actually got each other's life in our hands.
Amazing.
So we develop that real trust and that real bond, that relationship, which actually lasts lifelong. So if you can develop that amongst your team, amongst the models, that support structure is really strong.
So what advice would you maybe give to one of our models, he or she, who is going through problems and mental health issues, and they've been booked on a job, and it's, let's say, the depths of winter and they have to be outside in their underwear. Okay, it's completely different to, you know, life or death, but it's going to be a really tough day, and maybe the support isn't there from who they're working with, and they just feel alone. They don't think they can go through with it. What advice would you give?
So firstly, I'd say that they should seek professional help if they're going through mental health issues, because sometimes people also think they might have mental health issues, but they never actually seen a doctor, for instance, to get the professional advice in case there's something which can be done which will help them.
Mm.
So that's important. And then on top of that is also, if they're in that situation where where you describe where they felt they got no support, they got mental health issues. What you don't want to do is also, or for them to do is cause more harm and damage them further. Because again, same with the expedition side, I get people with mental health conditions who want to do an expedition. And for some expeditions, I actually say no to individuals. So rather than just take their money, their business, their safety is paramount. And I know how tough these things can be, just like some of these jobs where, like you mentioned, if it's a cold day, they're out in their underwear and they're suffering something mentally and they don't have that support network around. You don't want it to be damaged. So likewise, for my clients under my care on an expedition, I don't want them to come along where I actually cause more harm, cause more damage to them. Yeah. So they might be have the point where it's no. But on top of that, though, what's really important is how they can develop for future, where they can become a stronger individual. So as well as seeking professional help, they can form and develop the resilience in so many ways. And one way, I'm a big advocate of taking challenge, because can't say the exact reasons why in this society, why the mental health conditions might be on the rise. I mean, I think from 2006, and I might be mistaken, I think the mental health conditions have doubled since 2006. And the amount of medication people are taking, I think, has also risen exponentially. I've got my thoughts about various factors. And one of the factors that I believe is that we're lacking challenge in some elements of society at the moment. And resilience, if you do some sort of challenge, and it doesn't have to be climbing Everest, it could be your own Everest, some sort of challenge, that can actually cross-transfer what you gain in that confidence or self-belief, that resilience you gain there can actually cross-transfer to other areas. And that could even be in your work. And I've seen that from clients feeding back about how they've improved at work. They get less stress. They get some sort of positive transformation from the exhibitions they've done. And they can bring that back into their daily lives. So not saying that your models need to do an expedition.
Yeah.
They're more than welcome to, because that can build so much resilience and they can gain a lot of skills which can bring back to their workplace. But some sort of challenge can really help. So I think if they think about what they can do for future, if they're in a place where they know they're going to have work challenges, what they can do maybe even outside of work to take on a challenge and start increasing the resilience bit by bit.
That's great advice. I do agree. I think post-COVID, a lot of people tend to say no to things, and you have to often push yourself out of your comfort zone and just say yes, which sometimes feels uncomfortable. But then when you do say yes and push yourself, you do have that real sense of achievement. I mean, we touched on this earlier before we actually started the podcast, and I suffer from this myself, as you know. Stress. I mean, everyone goes through stress. What advice would you give with your experience and your knowledge for, you know, anyone in any job, and even models in stressful situations? What is some top tips that you can give to me, to other people, to just not be so stressed?
I'll give you in a moment maybe an example of, let's say, if there's a difficult situation, a challenging situation on an expedition, techniques which have actually worked, very simple techniques actually, and very common sense. But before I go into that, it actually goes back to the resilience again.
Yeah.
Because resilience is essentially, I'd say in a simplistic form, it's your ability to adapt to stress. So everyone's going to get stresses at life. But the more resilient you are, then the more you have that ability to adapt that to that stress. So it doesn't wear you down constantly, which will then go over a certain threshold if your resilience is low. And when you're over that threshold, that's when people can start having mental health conditions. So that's a very simplistic view. So if they can develop the resilience in the first place, it means that everyone's going to get stressed in life and work and jobs. That won't actually impact as much. And then they should hopefully be a strong individual and will be able to cope with the rigors and demands of life and work. Now, going just thinking off the top of my head some examples. Like, I'll give you an example for myself, for instance, which then I went on to use with other clients. Very simple. But I remember one time in my early days climbing, I was on a mountain in Africa, and I was one of my friends who's a very experienced climber, very good, older than myself, and I learned a lot from him and other people, other climbers with more experience than myself. I was, I sort of froze on this rock because there was exposure, and so if you fell, you'd do some serious harm.
Gosh!
But there, to get over it, he'd already got to the top of the climb, and he just talked me through it. He just said, "Raj, okay, just slow your breathing down." He noticed, I probably didn't notice, that I started maybe panicking and breathing faster than normal.
Mm.
And people, I suppose, in that situation don't realize what they're doing. So he wanted me, I think, to get that mental clarity and that focus again.
Mm.
So he told me, slow the breathing down. He said, simply, Raj, just start counting either in your mind or out aloud up to 10. And I started doing that, very simple, very easy. And suddenly I started regaining focus and clarity, like, where's my next move going to be?
Yeah.
How I'm going to get out of that situation. And then I actually became more controlled, more centered. And then it was no problem. You know, I achieved what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking I've used that as well as, I suppose, other techniques, but I've used that quite a lot with clients. I mean, I'm thinking one recently, we were in quite a wild place, Sierra Leone in the jungles there.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my clients had been on several expeditions before to various places with me. So he's fairly experienced, but this was quite a challenging expedition in Sierra Leone. And he started getting quite anxious, and I've, you know, never seen him like that before. And simply, I just told him, right, stop there, sit down, we're middle in the jungle. I want you to start counting to 10. And he did. And he just simply regained composure. And then we were able then to get down through the jungle to our camp.
Yeah.
So something as simple and common sense as that, if people just try that, it might work. It might make a real difference to them. Because breathing, actually, breath control is quite important to calm yourself down, ease the stress, relax the mind.
Yeah.
So something as simple like that may be able to help.
So I've watched some other, you know, TikToks or podcasts or whatever, and it says about if you're stressed, just do a big, deep inhalation of pff. But I do that, and it sometimes doesn't help. Obviously, I will now start counting to 10, but sometimes I feel like someone just needs to come and slap me around the face. I don't know. Is there anything else that I should be doing, or anyone else listening who suffers from the same problem? They think, okay, I'm doing the breathing, I'm doing this, it's just not working. You're sort of working yourself up into a state.
You might find one technique may not work for you, then try something else. So maybe try the counter to 10 rather than the just deep inhalation. I mean, you might find counter to 10 slowly, you might start taking deep breaths, and it might not just be one. You do it by counter to 10 over a series, you might find that actually helps relax you. So maybe try that. But people might find different things will work for them.
Mm.
One of the things I try to do is have people's perspectives change in a more positive way.
Mm.
And something which we use with my climbing friends on some big and more dangerous expeditions was a bit of a climbing mantra, which we started using in life and are using life. And one of the sayings which my friends had, who I was climbing with, was, if you've got a problem and you could do something about it, why worry? If you've got a problem and you can't do anything about it, why worry? So in a way, it's sort of saying, what's the point of worrying? And I found that years later, that actually that saying, but put much more eloquently than that, was actually said by the Dalai Lama.
Really?
So trying to stop prevention, I'd say, is better than the cure. So trying to stop that happening in the first place. So can you change your perspective on things like, why should I worry about this? You know, what's the reason? And I know for me, if I have challenges, I think with some of the things I've done in the past, the challenges I had, I try to put things into perspective while thinking, actually, I've been through a lot worse.
Yeah.
You know, why should I get stressed or worried about this? So then I can just park that aside. So stopping it happening at the first place, it will be vital. But I appreciate can be easier said than done. So if it does happen, trying different techniques like the one I suggested, or even if people do have a full-blown panic attack where they start hyperventilating, you probably heard of people being told, breathe in the paper bag. The reason being, actually, if you look at it physiologically, if people start getting anxious and they start hyperventilating, so their breathing becomes very rapid and shallow, what they do, the reason why people, they can start getting funny features, they start feeling dizzy, tingly, and they could even pass out as a result. Part of the reason that is because you're washing out your carbon dioxide when you breathe so much. And by doing that, that can give some of the features. So by the idea of slowing your breathing down, ideally if you can, so you're then getting the oxygen in, but you're not washing out so much carbon dioxide. But then if that's not helping, it's blowing into, let's say, a paper bag, because what you do then, you concentrate your carbon dioxide. And as you breathe it in, you're breathing in your the carbon dioxide, which you've lost.
And that
may help you calm down and stop you getting dizzy or the tingly feelings. I've spoken to people, they can get that before they actually pass out.
So in the office, I need a paper bag all around me.
or just think, hey,
calm down.
Life's great, you know. There's, what's the point of worrying, you know, as in, if you've got a problem and you can do something about it, you've got the solution, why worry? You've got a problem, you can't do anything about it, then why worry?
So talking about resilience and trying to get people to be more resilient, to stop the stress, I know we talked about doing a challenge, but if, you know, what simple advice could you give to new models out there or just to anyone listening to just be more resilient, to help with their stress levels? Even me, you know, what advice would you give?
Again, it's taking on other challenges, which could be in a very different environment and industry to what you're used to. And you can gain so much from that and have a newer perspective, a fresher perspective on things. I mean, we've actually started doing expeditions now with that resilience focus. So we started doing what we call resilience executive development expeditions, and we've taken people out and we've curated what we're going to do with them in a special way to focus that resilience. And the feedback's been outstanding. But that's been run by us. But you can think of your own challenge, what you can do, where, like you mentioned earlier, actually, something where you'll be out of your comfort zone, something which might make you uncomfortable. And then I think if you overcome that, you can gain so much. Where actually then in your normal work environment, if you have a challenging day or come across some obstacle, it won't be so insurmountable because you think, actually, I did this earlier. And so if I can do that, why can't I? Why can't I do this? Or that challenge won't bother you as much. So I think people will need to look at how can they challenge themselves, because I think we've lost that to some degree in a society. And if we can regain that, I personally believe then we'll be more resilient as people. And then we may not have, we'll all get the stresses still, but we may not have as many mental health problems.
What advice would you give to models? It's very tough being a model. You're constantly being rejected. Often you get jobs, but day in, day out, you're going to castings and you're, you know, often you don't know the feedback, but it's a no, a no, a no, a no. It's very hard, even the most resilient person, to be knocked back that many times. What would you suggest, any advice that you could give to just keep, you know, and they think, God, I'm just going to give up, I can't do this anymore. What would be some extra advice from you?
So one, I think taking on whatever feedback they're given, but not to take it personally. You know, if it's quite critical, sometimes it can really cause people to be quite downhearted, and then that can start, you know, they lose confidence. And I've been in situations, I've been in organizations where we've been in doing some quite tough things, and so the feedback had to be quite harsh, as in even to me or my team. And people would say things, and then, you know, they're saying it for a reason, as in not to pick on you personally, but actually as a individual or a group to try to improve. So that's one thing, is not take it to heart so much and try to turn it the other way. So actually, not take it to heart, but I hear what you say. I'm just going to do better next time. I'm going to improve.
Yeah.
And then it's developing what I call that grit, that determination. So that grit is having it, if you've got that passion for it, using that passion to keep going. Because again, I'm thinking and about the expeditions I've been on, where actually it's a lot of pain and suffering what we do. Sometimes climbing big mountains is not actually enjoyable. Mm. It's only afterwards do you get that contentment. So we got to keep going. So as one of my teammates would say, is actually you've got to be bothered. So when we feel like we don't want to carry on, he's saying this is where you've got to be bothered. So you've got to somehow get that into your mind that you've got to persist. And that's what I say, is not to take the criticisms personally as such, as in have it at the viewpoint, they're saying things to you not to attack you, but for you to improve next time and learn from that. Mm. And then the second thing is, if you've got the passion for what you really want to do for that, your work and job, you've got to have that grit and determination just to keep going, because you might have a 100 knockbacks before you get that one yes. But unless you keep trying, then you'll never know, and you'll never get that one yes, which could be a real springboard and platform to that model's career.
Yeah. I do love your comment earlier that you said everyone gets stressed. And I think maybe nowadays people think they just shouldn't be stressed at all, but that is normal. So everyone will be stressed. That's life. It's just dealing with the stress.
I've got, again, the reason why I think as well that maybe the way society, this is looking at something on a bigger picture scale, the way society has evolved is not conducive to humans and the stress. Because if you think about it, we used to be hunter-gatherers. Mm. So our stress response used to be from having a dinosaur trying to chase you or a dangerous creature. So you have that fight or flight response. So you get that stress, but then you get back to your cave or something somewhere safe and you relax and calm down.
Yeah.
But now what's happening is the stresses are different to that. So it may not be a dangerous animal, but it could be the constant flow of emails where people can't switch off. So the stress becomes quite chronic and continuous. And that's why it's important to develop the resilience, because if people don't, that chronic stress will really wear people down, where it pushes them over the edge, where they actually start developing health issues, physical issues, psychological issues. So I think the way society has evolved is very different to maybe how humans should live.
Mm.
And I think that's contributing to the chronic stress.
Yeah. I'm going to set up some expeditions, some model expeditions. We should do that. Stay tuned, people. David Beckham, you worked with him. Tell everybody about what that was for.
So I was privileged to be asked to lead the BBC and David Beckham through the Brazilian Amazon jungle. So it was a two-part BBC documentary called Beckham Into the Unknown. And it had the purpose of visiting the Yanomami tribe, which was very, very special. So they're a tribe which was in the northern part of Brazil. Very little contact with the outside world. So the BBC had to get the right permissions, because we can't just impose ourselves on people. We had to go with a blessing. So there was a chief of the Yanomami tribe who gave his blessing, his permission. And then that was taken to the Brazilian government to get their their permissions. And that tribe had never even heard of football. They didn't know what football was.
Yeah, so they didn't go with a picture of David Beckham. They went, oh, yes, come in.
No. And I think David liked that, because he could be anonymous. He could be himself.
Yeah.
Because when we were there, they just didn't know who he was. They never even heard of football. And it was very special, because we even overnighted there. So we spent a couple of days with them. And to get there, there's no roads. We had to fly by a single engine aircraft into the middle of the jungle.
Wow.
And but then it was incredible. And even just seeing how they live up, we talked about support structures earlier on. Mm. And that's why I think this tribe is quite resilient, because of their support structure. So they live in a very different housing system to what we're used to. Mm-hmm. They call it a shabona. So it was like a circular place. And it was wooden building structure. And in the middle, it had a central courtyard, which was their communal courtyard. But actually, in the wooden building, the shabona, all the families lived. They had no physical barriers, no walls between them. But they each had their own space, and that's how they lived. So it was an amazing community. And you could see then how they get their strength, because they got an amazing supportive structure. Yeah. Between one another. But that was, quite a wild expedition. Beautiful country, beautiful place, going through the Brazilian Amazon jungle, not without its dangers. And again, very challenging expedition for me to lead, because I had so many departments to actually gel on the expedition, whether it was the talent themselves, whether it was the BBC, the producers, directors, film crew. So it was for me, that was a challenge, a very fascinating and interesting expedition to lead.
I bet he was strong. What was he?
He made it. He made it to Yanomami, which was great. And I know the title I mentioned earlier, Beckham Into the Unknown. To me, I think it was also a play on words, because people might not appreciate. I don't think he realized or appreciated he was going to go into the jungle.
Really?
I think the information wasn't fed to him. And so he thought, I think he was going to go on a nice motorbike trip around the cities of Brazil.
They tricked him.
So it was a surprise for him, but he managed it and survived. And the main thing, we all came out safely, and hoping they got a lot from that journey. Because to me, that's really important about the expedition. It's not really just the end objective. It's that whole journey, that whole process. And that's what I try to instill into the clients I take on these expeditions, is enjoy each moment, enjoy each day. Mm. Because if we don't make it the summit, it doesn't matter. As long as you get something from that journey and then return safely. Mm. Because to me, the expedition can be like a microcosm of life, because life is a journey, really. But I think to have a fulfilling life, you need a meaningful purpose. And that's where it's important for the models. You know, if they've got a purpose why they're doing it, they've got a reason, they've got a passion, that will give them that drive and determination. That will give them, hopefully, that fulfillment in life.
Yeah. How would you create that purpose if you just feel completely lost and you feel that you don't have a purpose? What would your advice be?
They may have to then take a little time out to find that purpose, because that purpose will be to that individual.
Yeah.
Again, that support structure can be important.
Yeah.
People might have ideas, thoughts, which they can bounce around, and that could be really useful to give them a bit more clarity.
Yeah.
But they sometimes, it may not be good. It's good to try things, but if they find they don't have that purpose or passion, then they may be doing things for the wrong reason. So then might need to change direction or even take a step back.
Yeah.
And then think what they can do. Again, similarly, if we're on a climb and we're coming up to some challenges on a route where we haven't got that passion for that route, because there could be some serious dangers, could be fatal, and we're not going to gain much from it, we might downclimb, take a step back and change direction and go up another route.
Yeah. You keep mentioning support, and that is something that is so passionate for me, and that we do so much at Body, and we really support our models through tough times, model management. I mean, you know Mark as well. The mentoring that he gives to these models is incredible, but it's special to me to hear what you're saying, that it is so vital. And I think without support, you're just lost. And a lot of these models are just so lost. You're signed maybe with another agency and they're not mental health trained, or there isn't a support, and you're just allocated this one random booker who you maybe think doesn't like you. You just don't have any support there. But I do take pride in what we do, and that we really do give them support. But I think,
No, I think that's great what you do, what Marcus do in fostering that, because it, from my own experience, it's been vital on my own climbing expeditions, having that that team around you, that support. And likewise, same with the models. If you can foster that community, because if they're not getting it from, let's say, their agent or anything, if you can foster that to them, given that support structure, they've already got that strong foundation, that strong platform. And I see that with, on the expeditions, going to some amazing countries and seeing a variety of cultures. And I see somehow their community and what that gives to them, and it's got real meaning, and it's very, very powerful. So I think it's great what you're doing to try to foster that support network.
But this is why it's so great having you on here, just to learn and find out even more information, to just give them even more tools to be more resilient and not get so stressed. What advice would you give for my models to be more resilient? What challenges could they attempt that is achievable? I'm not saying they're going to go and climb Everest, but what would you suggest?
So, like we discussed earlier, the challenge doesn't have to be climbing Everest or going on an expedition. It's something they might have an interest in, but something which they know could make them uncomfortable. So I'll give you an example of some of my clients who've climbed mountains with myself. They've gone on to other challenges, very, very different. They told me about it. And again, they've improved as a person. They develop character. They become more resilient. So two of my clients, they've always wanted to learn a new language. They said they never had the opportunity to learn that new language growing up. They're quite scared in a way, or uncomfortable to try it. But then they thought, well, after climbing a mountain, why is that so difficult? But it's another challenge. And they felt uncomfortable, but they did. They started learning a new language and they succeeded. And I think they gained a lot from that, a lot more confidence, self-belief, as well as new skills. And then another client of mine never played any music, always wanted to learn the piano. So that's what they did. They thought this is going to be a challenge, but they actually bought a piano, simply started having lessons in their living room and learned how to play the piano. And I think, again, they gained a lot from it and developed some resilience from that by doing something they were a little uncomfortable doing. And that was nothing to do with climbing a mountain, but that was their own mountain, but on a piano.
Yeah.
So there can be lots. It could be, again, it could be reading a book, a new book. So that I think people can gain in so many different ways. They just got to think, though, what interests them and what would also make them uncomfortable.
I guess you could even go to, I'm just thinking of my models coming to London, go to a dance class. You know, you're going to have to be in a room with different people and learn the routine and just be thrown in. That's something achievable.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that would be... that will make me very uncomfortable. I'm sure I'm getting a lot of resilience from doing that. So I can imagine with your models. So something like that was a great idea. So I'm sure you'll have wonderful suggestions for them.
Yeah. I love this. I would love to just make a handbook and go, okay, right, here is your resilience handbook. Today you are going to a dance class. I would have a little army of, seriously, I should do that with my staff too. As well as the mental side, what physical... maybe diet as well as mind, can people do to prepare for the mental demands in modelling?
So I think physically, exercise, physical activity is key. That's one of the foundation blocks, I think, to a healthy body, healthy mind, as well as nutrition.
Yeah.
And again, not talking about your model specifically, I'm just talking about society in general. I'd say in the UK, the physical activity isn't as great as other cultures, and maybe it's gone down, you know, myself included. So people need to do something regularly. It doesn't have to be anything extreme. But what I noticed, again, the way society maybe has evolved, it's become more sedentary. So I'm thinking just some exercise they enjoy, can be some cardiovascular exercise. It could be some strength training, but doing something physical, going for a walk in the park. So amongst nature would be wonderful, but then you're doing some cardiovascular activity. So as simple as going for a walk, but doing it regularly is a key. So that's important physically. The other thing I say important physically is good sleep. It's amazing how many people don't sleep so well. And that's so important for your physical health, letting your body regenerate, recover, but yeah. also the mind as well. And that will help ease stress if people sleep well. So getting into some routine.
Yeah.
To me, common sense things, whether it's setting a pattern where you're getting, I'd say it, 6 to 8 hours at least sort of sleeping. So six to 8 hours will be a good figure to aim for. Going to bed, maybe, again, what I try to do is between 10 and 11 o'clock for myself. So not too early, not too late. And I sleep well without having disturbance at nighttime.
Yeah.
I could wake up in the morning feeling fresh. So if you're waking up, you're not feeling fresh. You're yeah. feeling tired, lethargic. Something's probably not right with your sleep. So look at what you're doing. Other things as well is the way technology has developed, and maybe we're using it too much. Late at night, not going onto the computer too much or your phone, and that can affect sleep as well. So maybe having a wind down period before going to bed. So yeah. just simple things like that can make a difference. And then nutrition wise is important. Healthy eating. Healthy eating, for me, I don't follow any particular diet. I think everything in moderation, just for myself, with the physical activity. But there are things there, you know, there's good foods and bad foods. And it's amazing now with medicine how we're finding out much more about our bodies through the DNA testing. So the things which we do where we can actually look to see what diet can suit people a bit better, the way people's genetics are made, because there's advice about food groups and what can be healthy, but actually in some people, they find it quite difficult to utilize nutrients from that particular food. So there's ways now which are more advanced, but people can find more information about their bodies. But to me, it's whatever works for them, whatever gives them that energy. They'll know what their body feels like after they have some food. If it feels yuck, then maybe that's not the best thing for them. It gives them problems.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's not rocket science. It's probably listening to your instincts, your own body could be one of the best ways of actually deciding. But nutrition is important. And I imagine in the modeling world as well, there'll be people with different shapes and sizes and maybe some pressures put on them because of the way they look or potentially their weight. And it's important to be a healthy weight. And what I mean by that is not be underweight or not be too overweight, because that can have physical health implications for that model, and maybe sometimes psychological as well. So for example, you've probably heard of the body mass index or BMI, which is a rough marker which people can use in the medical world to assess with someone's healthy weight or not. And if people are put under pressure, let's say if models are put under pressure, oh, they need to lose weight, then looking at their BMI is a good marker, because actually if their BMI is low, then it's probably unhealthy for them to actually lose more weight. And rough markers for BMI, they have a range from, let's say, 18.5 to 24.9. So anything under 25 and above 8.5 is considered like a healthy range. When they go below 18.5, is considered unhealthy. Likewise, anything above sort of 25 may not be so healthy. So those are just figures we just use on the medical side. But looking at things like that, so if someone's saying to a model, no, actually, you should lose weight, it may not be in their best interest. Yeah. It may be in their best interest, but they should also just look medically. Is that right for me?
I have a lot of models who are international from so many countries around the world. They might not know what BMI is or how to calculate that. How would they calculate that?
So it's your weight in kilograms over your divided by your height in meter squared.
Yeah.
And you can go onto the internet, it's open source, and they have a BMI calculator.
Okay.
So they can put in their weight and their height. And if they don't know their weight in kilograms, they've got conversion units. So BMI calculators can look at whether it's stones and pounds instead of kilograms, or for the height, it's feet and inches. It can calculate. So it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
It takes a few seconds, and it'll show them then, are they in what's considered medically a healthy BMI, body mass index.
I think that's great advice. We get so many models that come from nearby countries who maybe are told to lose weight, and they come here and, you know, I don't want you to lose any weight. You need to be healthy. So I think that's great advice. If someone has maybe ever told you that, do the calculation. And if you're underweight anyway, for goodness sake, think twice.
Yeah.
It's just so interesting, this, just to try and give my models so many more tools to be more resilient, because what they are up against in a normal day life is really not normal. You're just constantly put in these really uncomfortable situations and sometimes told to do things that you don't feel comfortable to do, told sometimes to lose weight, or you're just rejected. So it's really interesting just trying to give them so many more tools to fight through that and not let it affect them mentally.
Definitely. I mean, it sounds amazing work what they do, but challenging work. So that's what probably out of a lot of professions, that's even more important for them to develop that resilience to stop those stresses, which they're going to get anyway, from becoming so much that actually they start suffering physically and psychologically from health problems.
So I just want to ask you for some top tips for models nutrition-wise. So sometimes the clients don't provide food. We might not be told that they should. What advice would you give them to take with them on a long day ahead? What would be the best food sources that they could take to really thrive?
So firstly, I'd say you may have heard the saying little and often. Mm-hmm. So maybe frequent snacks throughout the day, because as well, having a big meal can actually make people feel sluggish and tired afterwards. But if they have frequent snacks, it can give them more of a steady state energy level. So you don't get these spikes where they dip their energy levels and then they have a big meal and it suddenly goes up, then they feel sluggish again. So more of an even keel. So again, though, they all know what's best for their body, whatever works, what makes them feel good and energetic. So listening to your body is important. But some of the things, like I can give you some examples, provided that people don't have allergies to them and they haven't got any issues eating these foods. But for example, nuts can be good sources, good sources of energy and protein, and got a lot of vitamins in them. Other things could be some berries as well. So nuts and berries. So sometimes I'm thinking as well, thinking on the expeditions, it's a similar thing. You want a steady state energy level.
Yeah.
And I'd carry, let's say, a bag of nuts, which I can just have a few each time, and that can give good energy. And then later on, I'll snack on another few. Again, berries can be good if you get the fresh fruit, which sometimes we can't get on expeditions, but they shouldn't have a problem bringing that in onto their shoots. So whatever they find gives them that energy and gives them good steady state energy without the spike. So everyone's an individual. And I think I mentioned earlier on about we do things like the DNA testing to actually look at what foods can suit models, and we're finding out more and more. So they all know, or hopefully they should know if they try different things, what works for their bodies. But I'd say that the more that little and often rather than the big meals.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah.
And also hydration, I say, is key because again, sometimes on the big expeditions to the mountains, we cannot eat as much food as we want because we can't physically carry it. But the key we say is hydration. So sometimes I've gone sometimes days without food, but only succeeded with adequate hydration. And that will be really important for your models because let's say when people start feeling thirsty, so they've got a long shoot and they haven't drunk, they're going to make a conscious effort to have some fluid nearby, whether it's water or something else, to actually make a conscious effort to keep sipping, to keep the levels up. Just like they snack in often, they should be sipping often. Because if they ever get thirsty, as a rough figure, they're probably already maybe about 2% dehydrated. But when you get to that level, your performance knocks off by about, let's say, 15%. These are ballpark figures. So if you think about it, if they're on a long shoot, I imagine there'll be some models who will actually start feeling thirsty and then they'll push on. But actually their performance is starting to already drop. They may not be actually giving their best performance. as a model. So it's important that they keep on top of hydration and keep sipping away. So they should never let themselves get thirsty in the first place. Mm. So sip away to a point where they don't really feel thirsty throughout the day.
Is there anything else that you think we should talk about or know about you or any other input that you could give to me on how to maybe improve how we're looking after our models?
It sounds like you're doing a great job already with that support structure you're providing your models. I think that that's important because that's one of the factors to build that resilience. And then I think in my mind, and this is what I'm a real proponent of, is building challenges for your models. Maybe you could start giving them suggestions. Again, does it have to be going on an expedition? But I know people develop a lot of resilience from that. But other challenges, whether it's like you mentioned earlier, taking them to a dance class or something else where it's different for them, it's new, so they're probably going to be out their comfort zone. But I think they can gain a lot for that. So to me, that support structure with some challenges will really help improve their resilience. And as well, because they'll probably come and imagine living in London, big urban environment, is seeing how often they can get into green spaces, into the nature. Our expeditions are run in a natural world, so that's another reason why they're even more powerful developing that resilience with clients. But the natural world, just going in a green space, has got evidence on its own just actually improving mental health. So trying to somehow take a step away from the urban environment and recessing themselves in a more natural environment will really help, because I think I mentioned earlier on, I partly grew up in those environments, and I think that's held me in good stead, is going into some green space and into a very natural environment, whether it's trees, forests, hills, mountains, or just a park in London can really help.
So even Hyde Park?
Even Hyde Park.
Yeah, okay. Or Richmond Park would be a great one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And lovely wildlife as well, which I think is really nice.
No, that's really good advice. I love that. Thank you so much for coming on today, seriously.
Thank you, Gemma, for having me here.
Thank you for coming along. Really appreciate it.